tuned into Quick Charge, the high voltage podcast bringing you the top stories in electric vehicles and sustainable energy daily. And it's all powered by Electrek. Welcome to Quick Charge. It's August 13th, 2024. I'm your host, Joe Boris. We're going to start today's stories off with news from Tesla, but it's not really news about a vehicle Tesla is building, more about a vehicle we want them to build. Tesla should make this electric camper van right now. Rendered by a visual artist and based on the Tesla Semi, Fred argues that not only should Tesla be making this now, they should have been making this for the last 4 years. In fact, a Tesla electric van, minibus, or people mover has been in the works for a long time. In the, quote, Tesla Master Plan Part 2, CEO Elon Musk talked about two new segments Tesla was looking to electrify. In addition to consumer vehicles, there are two other types of electric vehicle needed: heavy-duty trucks and high passenger density urban transport. Both are in the early stages of development at Tesla and should be ready for unveiling next year. We believe the Tesla Semi will deliver a substantial reduction in the cost of cargo transport while increasing safety and making it really fun to operate. That was back in 2016. The automaker did end up unveiling the Tesla Semi, which was plagued with delays, but is now finally making it into volume production. I disagree with Fred on that. It's making it into like hand-built, ultra-limited production. But hey, not here to argue with the boss on this one. The high passenger density vehicle, though, was never unveiled. Tesla has talked about it several times, and there were rumors of Tesla working on one for the Boring Company. But if it were true, they have yet to make anything public. In 2021, Musk even talked about Tesla building an electric van with a solar-powered deployable roof. That also hasn't happened. Now, regardless of any of that, this thing is absolutely gorgeous. As a concept, there is a precedence for medium-duty heavy truck manufacturers to build a RV-type body on that chassis, whether that's an International chassis or a Mack chassis. Those vehicles do exist on the high end of the RV market, and this would definitely be in that high end of the RV market. Looking at the renderings of the interior, very simple, very on brand for what one would imagine Tesla would offer here. Now, I do find it interesting that the concept artist did away with that center seat position. The center seat position has always been dumb. It would be dumb in a Semi. It'll be just as dumb in an RV. But hey, if you don't believe that the central driving position is dumb, why not have it in the RV as well? Regardless of any of that, this is a pure design exercise. It looks great. It speaks to that Tesla brand very nicely. And I could easily see this for sale along that high-end Airstream line. That kind of market, I think, would be willing to pay several hundred thousand dollars for something like this, if not getting close to a million. And before you freak out about that, a Prevost bus, one of those big bluebirds, those are about $2 million right now. And they are nicer than your house. I haven't seen your house, but I've seen the Prevost, and it is nicer, trust me. Dominic is the name of the guy who designed this. He even came up with an online configurator that had a couple of specs on this. That 420 miles of range might be a little bit optimistic, but hey, none of this makes any sense anyway, and a kid can dream. $94,990 is what he projects on this. I think he's missing a zero, but hey, that's just me, and nobody asked. Another thing that nobody asked me was how Tesla was doing in Europe. Tesla's doing well in China, but sales are slumping in Europe. For the first time in years, Tesla's overall deliveries have been down in the first half of the year compared to the same period last year. Now, there was a drop in sales during the COVID pandemic, but it bounced right back. It was not a sustained reduction in sales. And by the time the Q2, Q3 rolled around, that was over. This time is different because it's the first time Tesla's deliveries have been down year over year for two quarters in a row since it became a major automaker. The problem is highlighted by Europe, where Tesla's deliveries based on registration data are down by about 60,000 units so far this year compared to 2023. Tesla continues to face strong competition in Europe, and on top of that, many believe its overall lineup is starting to get stale. And frankly, it's impossible to argue that point. We've now become so familiar with the Tesla Model S, which first debuted in 2009, and even though there have been updates like the Highland update for the Model 3 the nose cone update for the Model S, I think you'd be hard pressed to get the average non-enthusiast to tell the difference between the two vehicles, whether it's the update or not, unless they're parked side by side. And that's a real problem, because if you're buying a vehicle and you're the type of person who leases a new vehicle every 3 years, you might be now on your third Model 3, certainly your fourth or fifth Model S, if that's what you're going for. So once you've gone into the Model Y, maybe you get a second Model Y, but do you like it enough to get a third one? That's a tough sell, and I think Elon is experiencing that right now. But all that said, I'm going to share Fred's take on this instead of giving you my own, or rather, instead of continuing to give you my own. And that's because I think Fred has actually nailed this. It's 100% dead on, no notes. I'm going to share it. Fred's take here is that this shows that Tesla is increasingly reliant on the Chinese market for its sales performance. The US is stalling and Europe is slumping. It is not shocking, considering the Cybertruck is the only new vehicle Tesla has launched in the last 4 years, and it's not even available in Europe. Tesla needs a wider lineup to keep growing its deliveries. It's as simple as that. Yes, solving self-driving might help too, but at some point, Tesla needs to admit that it doesn't actually know when it's solving that problem. And yeah, it's tough to argue with Fred on that. I think he absolutely nailed it. I don't imagine there's a ton of people sitting on the sideline who are just waiting for full self-driving to become a reality so that they can place their Tesla order. However, that said, I do think there is a lot of people who are waiting on the sideline to buy their first EV because they don't have access to charging in their multifamily dwellings. And as you know, 40% of Americans live in a multifamily apartment style community. That's why a company like Switch, which is developing new products specifically aimed at the multifamily dwelling market, are so important. Today, I've got my guest, Tom Casper, who's a senior business development manager at Switch. And Tom, thanks so much for being on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Now, Tom, I did the same thing that I think everybody's going to do when they hear this segment. They're going to go to Google and check out Switch. And when I got to the website, the thing that really struck me was this kind of initial statement that says, the transition to being an EV-ready property is not always simple. That's where we come in. Switch was created to effectively manage the complexities of multi-vehicle EV charging at properties both new and old. Yep. What does that mean?
It's a very eloquent way of kind of letting us speak to a lot of the different things that we do well. So what we find a lot of times is people want to put X number of EV chargers in, and we can speak specifically to the ComEd area where we kind of both are currently. A lot of people are kind of landing on that number 10, and they don't know if that's enough, too many, too few, whatever the case might be. So we have ways of allowing them to turn that loitering on during the day, off at night, so that they're keeping that churn so that people have access to the chargers, not hogging them and parking there for 16 hours and only charging for an hour and a half. And then access control and customizable rate structures as well, where being able to lock it down so that only the residents or tenants or people who work in the building, depending on the type of building it is, have access to the chargers via access code or being a known user. And then a step further than that is to say, we do, this is a mixed use building. Let's say we want the people that are here to shop or to go to the park or whatever the case might be to use the chargers, but we'd like to make a higher rate off of them and offer more of an amenity rate to folks that are, you know, associated or affiliated with the building. So we allow for all of that very customizable to your building, your property, your unique system. And then what it really speaks to is Switch control. And we can talk a little bit more about that if you're interested.
I'd love to talk about that because I think, you know, the thing that always comes up when you're talking about electrification, you're talking about mainstream electrification of the overall private vehicle fleet. The number that always gets thrown out is 40% of Americans live in multifamily dwellings and they can't charge at home. I think that solutions like yours that primarily focus on multifamily dwellings and that have solutions for mixed use buildings that are thinking about these customers and are coming up with solutions for these customers, I think are super mission critical, right? And it does ultimately come down to the software and the controls.
Yeah. So Switch control is, it's really kind of designed around maximizing the electrical capacity that you have. Or in the cases like Chicago and a lot of other places across the country that are putting in codes requiring EV charging for large, you know, percentages of your parking area, especially for multi-unit dwellings. But the more exciting part of Switch control, because 99%+ of buildings that exist right now are already built. And most of them were built prior to knowing that cars were going to be electric and we needing to have capacity for charging. Well,
especially where you and I are in Chicago.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the buildings that I walk or interact with are much, much older, and we're dealing with limited electrical capacity, and upgrading your service, bringing in more power is possible, but it's time consuming. It tends to be more expensive. Not every market has a program like ComEd where the infrastructure is going to be covered by an incentive program, which I know we're very lucky to have that here. So the path of least resistance that we found is we can actually put a smart CT clamp on the panel and monitor the panel itself. So we can't, in the EV only scenario, the only thing on the panel is EV. So we know we can control them and taper them up and down accordingly. When we're also on a panel that includes HVAC, exhaust fans, lighting, all sorts of other stuff that we have no control over, what we can do is put a monitoring device on the panel that actually tracks the actual real-time capacity on the panel at any given time, or the real-time load. And it then pushes that information to the chargers and only allows them to consume whatever the delta between max capacity and, or max operating capacity and, you know, current load on the panel is. So what you tend to see is 6 o'clock at night until 10 o'clock at night, when everybody's home from work and turning on every electric thing that they have, the chargers will run at a slower rate. Overnight, you tend to not consume a ton of electricity overnight. As things get quieter in the building, lights go off and everything, the chargers will speed up again overnight. So it's a way to accommodate aging electrical infrastructure. And for some people, it's a way to get some chargers in as like a proof of concept, see that it works, generate some revenue, see that there are more people who drive EVs looking to live in your building before you maybe invest in upgrading your infrastructure and adding more power to accommodate EV charging. But in some cases, it's as simple as we don't have enough power. We'd like to get EV chargers in, and it's a way that we can kind of solve that problem.
The last thing I want to talk about here is being tech agnostic. I see tech agnostic a couple times in the website. You mentioned partnering with LG, that it was the first time you've partnered with LG. I presume that, you know, you are able as Switch and through Switch Control to use a variety of hardware so that if you go into a building, you go into a condo association that has an existing EVSE solution, has existing hardware in there, that you can put that Switch Control over it and then grant this kind of accessibility and loitering and equitable energy sharing to that existing system. Is that an oversimplification, or does that make sense?
So Switch was the tech agnostic or hardware agnostic piece is really important to us. We have a lot of really important partners on the hardware side that, to simplify it, yes, if it's an OCPP compliant charger, we can interact with it somehow or another. To what level? That's where it gets a little tricky. So Switch Control is actually one of the things that can be a bit of a disqualifier. It has to do with, so all of our key vendors, our tier one, if you will, hardware partners and folks that we work with on a regular basis can do Switch Control, the basic level, and the CT clamp level. That CT clamp deployment is where it gets a little tricky at times. So there's some hardware that maybe we haven't fully tested it. Maybe we haven't tested it to the point of, but we would never recommend. Obviously we lean on folks that we've worked with, that we have good faith in, that we've tested on for hours and hours and know that things are going to work well. And then the flip side of that coin to the person who installed the chargers with the agnostic piece is, if for some reason down the road, they're not happy with Switch, whether our prices go up or they're unhappy with our uptime or downtime, I guess would be much more I'm happy about. But if at some point they're unhappy with that solution, it's as simple as changing from Verizon to AT&T and keeping your iPhone, where there's a lot of models out there where you're buying a proprietary vendor lock solution that only works with one network and one software.
Yeah. And you got to rip it out of the ground if you want to make a change.
Right, right. So in our model, we put it on us that we need to keep earning your business year in and year out, 3 years, 5 years, whatever the initial term is. We have to keep you impressed and keep you happy moving forward if we want to keep you as a customer long term, because you could just as easily say, no, cancel, I'm not paying that invoice. But we see it as that we don't want to stick anybody with a stranded asset. We want people to have the flexibility as they scale to be able to make a decision. And we want that decision to keep being Switch. So we have things like 24/7 customer support with Switch staffed customer support. And our feature set keeps expanding and our prices stay competitive because that's the goal of the game. We want you to stick around. We don't want you to switch.
Stop. Oh, man, that is so good. All right. Well, I think we've peaked with that. It's not going to get any better today.
Absolutely.
Tom, obviously, we're coming to the end of our time commitment. I want to thank you for being on the show, obviously. How can people find out more about Switch? If you're a developer listening to this, if you're a property manager, you're an HOA, you want to find out more, how do they get a hold of you?
Yeah, look us up. Our website, we're Switch Energy with no I, S-W-T-C-H Energy. We're on LinkedIn as well. YouTube, if you're interested in kind of seeing demos of the platform, check us out. And I can also send over some information to you after this if you want to put it in the show notes for where people can find us. And look me up on LinkedIn.
Referencing the show notes, that's very bold. You're not the co-host. You don't get to reference the show notes. What are you talking about?
It's just something I heard. I hear on podcasts once in a while.
Something people say. Yeah. No, I got you. All right. We'll put it in the show notes. That was strong. We'll send it over. I'll put it in the show notes.
Perfect. And look me up on LinkedIn. Reach out. I'd be happy to talk about your EV charging needs and how we might be able to help solve them.
That was Tom Casper, again, Senior Business Development Manager at Switch. Thanks so much for being on the show. Obviously, Tom and I both live in Chicago. We both worked on that Wrigleyville project together, so it's fun to talk to him and catch up a little bit. I hope you enjoyed that as well. Now, obviously, guests are a new thing that we're trying on Quick Charge. Seems to be well-received. If there's a guest that you'd really love to hear from on the show, please go into the comments and let us know. We're doing our best to get them on. And one company I would love to have on the show is Jackrabbit. I've known these guys for a couple of years now. I've ridden these bikes all over California, all over Northwestern campus here in Northern Chicago. These are great guys, fun little bikes, not necessarily e-bikes because they don't have pedals. So technically that makes them electric scooters, but fun nonetheless. Micah has a great review on the new OG2 launch. This is an updated version of their classic little Jackrabbit scooter. This is the first electric micro bike to gain a mass following in the U.S., racking up a community of more than 30,000 riders, or Jackos as they call themselves. And now the bike is getting a series of upgrades in the launch of its second generation model, the OG2. The new OG2 comes with upgraded frame featuring a higher 275-pound weight capacity, reinforced foot pegs, a quick-release thumb screw for battery swaps and removal, an innovative new handlebar that turns 90 degrees for flat storage against a wall or under a bed, and more attachment points for accessory mounting. On the electronic side, there are new hardwired LED light ports, new digital display that includes a more precise battery meter, and internally routed wires and cables. Now, as you probably know by now, I love to end these shows with conversations about solar, about energy, about utilities. Today is no different. President Biden has doubled a tariff-free solar cell import quota that was set by President Trump. The White House proclamation released yesterday increased the volume of silicon solar cells that can enter the U.S. tariff-free from 5 gigawatts to 12.5 gigawatts. That tariff is currently set at 14.25%. Trump imposed the tariff rate quota on solar cells under Section 201 of the 1974 Trade Act in 2018 to protect the U.S. solar manufacturing sector against cheaper Asian imports. Abigail Hopper, president and CEO of the Solar Energy Industry Association, SEIA, said in a statement, quote, SEIA strongly commends President Biden's decisive action to support American solar module manufacturers by raising the Section 201 tariff on solar cells. This move provides an important bridge for module producers to access the supply they need while the United States continues to progress on solar cell manufacturing. This decision will help create a strong, stable module manufacturing sector that can sustain robust cell production in the long run. This is a tough one. I really want to get excited about it because it's something Biden did, and I really want to love this because obviously it goes against something that Trump was doing. But I think that's a little bit oversimplified. This is a complex issue. I think that the protectionist attitude here was the right one, might have been the right one. Not really sure. Feel free to let us know what you think in the comments. And hey, if you're a JD Vance guy, let us know what kind of sofa you have too. I'm sure that'll be really interesting to him. That's all I've got for today, August 13th, 2024. If you liked what you heard, be sure to like and subscribe. If you didn't like it, nobody cares.